tether of off, we're gonna tether of off the mother sucker, tether of off the sucker. A tether of off, we're gonna tether of off the mother sucker, tether of off the sucker. A tether of off, we're gonna tether of off the mother sucker, tether of off the sucker. A tether of off, we're gonna tether of off the mother sucker.
Hip hop.
If you having girl problems, I feel bad for you, son. I got 99 problems, but a bitch ain't one. I got the rat patrol on the cat patrol. Foes that want to make sure my cash is closed. Rat critics save money, cash holes. I'm from the hood, stupid. What type of facts are those? If you grew up with hoes and you're zapped with toes, you celebrate the minute you was having dope. I'm like, fuck critics, you can kiss my whole asshole. If you don't like my lyrics, you can press fast forward. Got beef with radio if I don't play they show. They don't play my hits. Well, I don't give a shit, so rap max trying to use my black ass so advertisers can give them more cash for ass, fuckers. I don't know what you take me as or understand the intelligence that Jay-Z has. I'm from rags to riches, niggas, I ain't dumb. I got nothing.
Everyone wonders where.
Hello, my name is Larry Russ, former keyboardist and vocalist for Iron Butterfly, 1999 to 2005. And when I want to listen to great talk radio, I listen to Brian the Hammer Show on BT Radio.
Tokyo! Say please, Hammer! Don't hurt him! Let me hear you say! Loud!
You can tell everybody, yeah, you can tell everybody, go ahead and tell everybody, I'm the man, I'm the man, I'm the man, yes I am, yes I am, yes I am, I'm the man, I'm the man, I'm the man.
I believe every lie that I ever told, paid for every heart that I ever stole, I played my cards and I didn't fold, well it ain't that hard when you got sold. Somewhere I heard that life is a test. I've been through the worst, but I still get my best. God made my mold different from the rest. Then he broke that mold, so I know I'm blessed. Stand up now and face the sun. Won't hide my tail or turn and run. It's time to do what must be done. Be a king when kingdom comes.
So you can tell everybody. Yeah, you can tell everybody.
Good morning, everybody, and welcome to the show. You're listening to the Hammer Radio Network, Hammer 96.7 BT Radio in Los Angeles, and I am executive producer Ellen Johnson coming to you live from Metairie, Louisiana. And today on the show, we have James Horling, system safety engineering. I'm sorry. I don't know why a person shoots up a school, but I know an effective way to stop it, too. If each school district developed their own safety assessment report, they'd have a plan to take forward for funding consideration. We talk about school safety, how to prevent a school shooting, mental health safety methodology, how to be safe in public places. And also we're going to have headline news, music and entertainment, politics, box office. And we may even have Brian make a live phone call or two, so you don't want to miss that. And if you'd like to come in and join us, 319-527-6099 is the number that gets you into the studio. So come on in, have some fun, tell us what's on your mind. And now, without further ado, the number one radio personality, Brian the Hammer Jackson.
Oh, thank you, Ellen. I don't know if you can hear me.
Yeah,
but well, I am disabled today, folks. I'll tell you what happened. I'm an excruciating.
You're disabled
too. I'm in excruciating pain. It's going to be a short show because people don't want to hear me scream like a little girl. Let me just tell you, first of all, good morning, good afternoon, and good evening. Welcome to the show. We are heard around the world. I am Brian Hammer Jackson. That is Ellen J. in the Morning. We're also on
TuneIn and Stitcher. Yep.
Yeah, right.
And are we on iTunes, too?
We're on iTunes, too, and SoundCloud, and we have a bigger audience. I want to just say thank you for supporting the show, and thank you for listening. Put us on in the background while you surf the web, or do they even say web anymore? While you search the internet and pay your bills. Just put us on in the background, everybody. If you'd like to come in, Ellen has the number. The number is
319-527-6099.
You can come on in and just listen to the show. Ellen will go to you, and you just tell her I'm just listening. And that's fine. And that's what we do. And we'll leave you alone. You can enjoy the show. And if there's some a topic that you want to talk about and you want to get in a conversation, all you have to do is hit the number one on your dial or your phone. And that will raise your hand in the studio, and we'll go to you. I want to say congratulations to Jan. We just awarded him a nice, beautiful watch, and he got the author and book of the month. It's a great book. It's called Annihilation. Ellen?
Annihilation.
That's right.
His book is
it's an excellent
titled
book.
Annihilation. Yep. It looks really good.
It is really good. On Amazon right now, it's selling for $9 and for this week only. We have it half off in the streamable stores. So it's a great book, great read, well written. All our authors, I mean, one's coming in right now, two's coming in today, Mr. Jim Horling, and also Irene Barron. All these guys are just amazing. And it was 10 people who voted. And again, Ellen explained it on social media that the thing that stuck out most is Jan, who unselfishly supported a lot of his fellow authors, and he also shared their information and great promotion, self-promotion. It's hard to promote by yourself. Dedicated for him to do his self-promotion and also the interview he had on his show. And congratulations, Jan. It's a great book. And that doesn't mean the rest of the books are not going to make it, because all it means is even if you still have your book there and they're with us in the streamable stores, that book could still be next month, because it's just, like I said, the books were so good. All these writers are so amazing, just so amazing. Just you could still, how you call it, promote, self-promote, help other authors, your fellow authors and everything. We see that. I mean, the stories itself is like all these guys are like a tie. They're just amazing authors. But we love it when people help other authors. It's just makes a great thing. Congratulations, Jan. There's two things. We have a great James Harlings coming in the studio. We're going to talk about safety, school safety, maybe nuclear weapons. We're going to talk about a lot of things because I know it's a political. Was that Jim, baby, who just left the studio?
No, that was Irene. She got the time mixed up.
Okay, did I get it mixed up, or did I get it right?
No, she did. She got it mixed up.
Okay. Really quickly, what we're going to talk about, that's on my mind, and before Jim gets in, that's what we do. First thing is the Intel report. Let me tell you about the Intel report. Why it's so important to
Let me do my thing, Brian. The Intel is back,
okay.
Bigger and better than ever, baby.
Wow. Yeah, I love that. Thank you, sweetheart.
You're welcome.
Why is it a very important tool? The Intel report. I know you're an author,
What?
The pain.
What are you going?
The pain.
Oh.
No, I can't scream. I just got to go.
go ahead, scream.
It's really important too for the authors because No, I'm not going to scream. It's really important for the authors, and the reason why it's important for the authors to do an op-ed on it is it gets you name, gets your name known, it gets you a bigger audience, and you have good opinions in your authors. But other than that, it also gets you to pad your resume. Not only you're an author, but now on your resume, you can say you're a journalist and you've been printed. See how that works, guys?
Mm-hmm.
I'm an author, but now I'm a journalist because I've been printed and certified.
Yeah.
So use your tools. And the way to get that, if you want to go and get involved in an Intel report, it's very easy. The URL is sample, S-A-M-P-L-E, dot mvpondemand.com. Sample dot mvpondemand.com. That gets you in to the Intel report. Sample, S-A-M-P-L-E, dot mvpondemand.com. One word. That gets you in there. Register. Take advantage of it. You're a writer, for God's sake. This is your tool. You can do an op-ed or you can do something, anything that you want. It goes around the world, has your name on it, and now you can pad your resume as not only an author, but a journalist. So use it. Take advantage of it. Sell your books. Sell your music. Promote your film.
Yeah, I was about to say,
all right,
if, you know, even if you're a business person, you know, like you own
right.
a business, you're in sales, you, and there's something on your mind, write an opinion piece about it, put it in the Intel report, and you can also promote your business and your products that you're doing.
That's right. There's two things on my mind that we're going to talk about after the interview, if we have time. Number one is Epstein. You heard the story about the billionaire who just got arrested for basically sex trafficking. Jeffrey Epstein, he's a billionaire. He's accused of molesting minors. The reason this is really important, well, it's important because this asshole is doing it. But the connection that he has with Donald Trump, the connection that he had with Bill Clinton, if this guy talks, it is like, you know when they catch these hookers with the names in the books, you know, they're afraid that they're going to mention them. Because the last thing we heard, Bill Clinton was on a plane with him, and so was Donald Trump. And Donald Trump said something, too, about him, that he's a great guy, he's a fun guy, and they partied all the time. Well, with this Epstein character, he used to house these girls from 14 to 17, and then he used to, you know, feel them out to powerful politicians. And the Trump administration covered it up. They gave him some light sentence, like 12 months in jail or something, but they covered the shit up. If this guy starts talking, he's going to really, really hurt and damage some careers, including the Trump administration and Bill Clinton. That's a story to watch. The other one is, let me tell you something. Let me just tell you something. You women are out of control. Stop it. Just stop
what?
It. Listen to me. Well, everybody's talking about the women's soccer team. Whoop-de-doop, and it's ridiculous. Stop it. Now they're talking about they want equal pay to men. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
First of all, there's not a lot of men watching this game. You know why? Because nobody wants to see women walking around kicking their balls. Not fun. Not good. Nobody wants to see a lot of women walking around and putting their head to their, well, I don't know, that part may be good. It bounces out. But second of all, you know, sports doesn't work that way. And this is why women should not be in sports. It doesn't work that way. People in sports do not get paid a salary. Well, wait a minute. Let me go back. This is not like a job that you go to and everybody get, you know, that this sitting at a desk, you get $1,500 a month and then you move up and you get a, and that's not how sports work. This doesn't have, everybody on a team gets paid a different contract. That's how it works. You don't see everybody on the Pelican saying, all right, we're going to start you off. You get $20 an hour. You dribble a couple of times to make a layup. Maybe next week you get a raise. It doesn't work that way. Knock it off, ladies. Stop it. And it's insane. Right now they're talking about these women soccer players. I don't know if they're women because they're more men than they are women, to tell you the truth. But they're out there yelling, and people are yelling, equal pay. Okay, let me give you an idea. You want equal pay? First of all, when you play sports, you don't get equal pay. Michael Jordan did not get paid the same as Pippen did not get paid the same as Michael Jordan. That's just how it works, women. Knock it off. And let me tell you another reason why this is stupid. Well, we want to get paid the same as the men, and the men lose and we win. No, doesn't work that way. Because number one, last year, the men's soccer team brought in $6 billion with a B. Billion. Last year, the women's soccer team brought in $200 million. It's apples and oranges, ladies. You're lucky we even watch you. You're not bringing in the gate, baby. So quit yelling that I want to get paid more as a man. You're not bringing in the gate. And you don't yell at us and say equal pay like it's a government thing. An owner owns the team. This is how it works, ladies. I'm sorry. You call yourself professionals. This is not professional. You look like a moron. Michael Jordan doesn't go to HR and say, I want a salary. I want to get a raise.
No, you know what they do? You know what they do? They hold out until they get the salary they want. Now, you tell me that's not throwing a little temper tantrum.
Right. Well, there's agents involved, owners involved. There is a salary cap. But you don't say, I want a raise, and you get a raise. The owner, if the owner's not paying you, you get traded. If you're not making the money that you're making, get rid of your agent. That's how it works, ladies. You're just making yourself look like a moron. That's not how sports work, equal pay for men. First of all, bring in a gate. Maybe run around the field topless sometimes. I don't know. But it doesn't work that way.
Oh my God.
If you're not happy with it, you go to the owner. And the owner says, I'm sorry, there's a salary cap. If there's a salary cap in women's soccer, then you go to the league and say, lift the salary cap. Then you go to your agent. And if you're not happy with the team you're with, then you shop around, let them trade you to get a team that you're worth. But the bottom line, ladies, is that the men's team pulled in $6 billion in revenue last year. The female soccer teams pulled in $200 million. And you're asking to get paid $400 million as the bottom player of a men's soccer team? The whole league didn't make $400 million last year. You're showing your ignorance, and don't encourage this. This is why women ruin sports. This is why we don't watch them. There are a lot of crying and whining. Where's that Tom Hanks thing? There's no crying in soccer. Where is that? You know what I mean? We got to stop with this millennial crap that everybody gets a participation trophy, that everybody should get paid the same. We encourage this for those numbnuts little millennials that you guys had by hugging them and kissing them and kissing their boo-boo, and then they grow up to be morons. You got to knock it off. This is what happens. You know what I mean? This is what happens.
Ryan, and Jim is in the studio, too.
Okay. The sex trafficking charges are announced live. Let me see. Hold on 1 second. Because I think Jim's going to be interested in this, too. I mean, you know, I'm not a big fan of women's sports because I don't think there's one woman's sport that even catch my attention. Nobody's watching women play.
Oh, what about You said the thing that caught your attention the other day was the women's softball team.
Well, the reason that caught my attention is because I like the catcher, because when a catcher does her signals, it looks like she's doing something X-rated. You know what I mean? It really does.
Well, you know,
I don't even know the score, but it really does. Oh, and any man don't think it's different. That's the only thing that helped me there, huh?
That's the same thing for the men's baseball team and stuff. You know, they do the same thing. It looks like they're doing something.
Yeah, but the one finger and the two fingers are a little different than a male catcher and a female catcher. Think about it. That's the only thing. I don't even know who won. I don't know who I was rooting for. All right, without further ado, so right now, this sex trafficking charge is going to be announced live with Jeffrey. I'm a man. If any other man is honest, they'll say the same thing. The sex trafficking charges are going to be announced against Jeffrey Epstein. We're going to go to that live, but right now we're going to let Jim in. I'm going to put it on the TV. When it comes in, we're going to go to that. Let Jeffrey in. I mean Jeffrey. Jim. James. Let James in. James is my friend. And good morning, James, Mr. Horling.
Good morning. How are you doing, Brian?
James, you're a guy. You and me, we're guys.
Right.
But you're a gentleman, and you're smarter than me. Other than that, we're guys.
Right. Well, okay.
No, you're.
Let's just say we're interested in different things, perhaps. I don't know if I'm smarter than you.
Oh, you are. You are. And I appreciate you coming down to talk to me. But when we strip off this whole thing and we're guys and we're in our underwear in the locker room, we're guys.
God.
This thing, well, it's true, Ellen. It's true. We wash our balls at the, you know, like one ball after another, just like any other man who washes with soap. James, these women with softball, the baseball thing, they're asking for equal time or equal pay. It doesn't work that way, James. It doesn't.
No,
I agree.
I agree with you about that. But, you know, when you start talking about something like that, you're starting to push buttons that a lot of people are very sensitive to. And then, you know, the media picks up on it, and before you know it, it gets blown all out of proportion, I think. I mean,
it really does.
I'm all for equal pay for equal work, but as you, I was listening to you talk a little bit about it, and there's more to it than just that. And, you know, popularity, name recognition, even interest in the sport, all that gets factored into the paycheck. So, it would be nice if the men and the women got paid the same, but I don't think that's how the economics work.
I agree with you. And if you want to go a step further, a lot of these athletes get their money from endorsement. And so they're not going to their owners saying need more pay. Ladies, if that means Nike's not endorsing you and you're not getting a Coca-Cola or a Pepsi contract, that's where a lot of the money comes from.
Yeah,
so,
that's true.
Yeah, so they're not endorsing you.
And we don't hear about that part of it. You know, we don't hear about one athlete complaining they should get more endorsement money. I mean, that's something between the athlete and the sponsor. So
that is
true.
Well, thank you, James.
Hey,
can I call you James or Jim? Go ahead.
Call me Jim. Call me Jim.
Okay.
My wife calls me James when I'm in trouble. So.
Oh, they do.
It's usually just Jim. Hey, speaking of athletes and endorsements, and this is kind of off track, but what did you think of the Colin Kaepernick issue with the Betsy Ross flag thing?
Oh my. You know, don't make me go crazy, Jim. You just got here. You want to make me go crazy. You know,
I don't know.
What do you think?
The reason I asked is because when this was played out over a couple of days, 2 or 3 days, and now it sort of died out. But, you know, on the surface, it seemed like, what the heck is this guy, you know, talking about? I mean, he said that he suggested to Nike, which is another interesting thing, that he has that much control and power over that corporation. But, you know, that that flag would offend a significant number of people because of its racial overtones, you know, with tied to slavery and that kind of thing. And at first I thought, you know, there was slavery at that time, and it, you know, wasn't a good time for that kind of thing. But then I read this report, this article about the fact that Betsy Ross was an abolitionist. She was a Quaker. Mm-hmm. And the Quakers at that time were very anti-slavery. They did everything they could do to help people, you know, lift them out of that situation, support former slaves, and even, you know, try to get laws changed to abolish slavery. And then it kind of dawned on me that, well, Kaepernick apparently didn't research this, because if anything else, we should be celebrating Betsy Ross for her position, you know, in that, her anti-slavery position. And, you know, that 13-star flag really should be looked at as the first steps toward racial equality in this country. So, you know, after that, I just kind of chalked it up to somebody who probably doesn't know a whole lot about history or care about it, and was just looking to make a splash in the media.
Well, Kaepernick is a moron. He's not that bright. That's why he doesn't like to talk in public, and you very rarely will hear him speak, because he's a moron. And, Jim, you know, I'm black, and I'll keep saying it, so if any new people tune in and they don't see the post, slavery happened, folks. It did. It did.
Yeah,
we moved on.
It's a black mark on this country that's not going to go away.
There's a lot of black marks. If you look at the history of the United States, if you look at the history of the New World, and when Spain and England sent their criminally insane to Austria, is it Australia? I think it was Australia. Then Australia said, we don't want any more crazy people, send them to America. That, you got to remember how our country was really, really built upon and founded. And we can go with the American Indians, so on and so forth, or the Native Americans. It happened. Done. It's not happening anymore. My kids can go to a school, and great Americans and great ladies, women, have fought for civil rights. People have died for it. And I look at it this way, Jim. My ancestors, if you will, or my relatives, if you will, died for me to come on this air and talk to you for civil rights. I'm sure yours are yours too. I don't know if you're Irish or you have Italian in you or whatever. And they died for that. They got bitten by dogs. They were beaten, blah, 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 for me to speak to you.
Right.
And for me to get my education.
My great-grandfather was held in a concentration camp during World War II.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And that's my point.
What's important about all this is that, yes, you know, since the founding of this country, there have been, you know, our history has a lot of black marks on it. But what's important and what we shouldn't forget is that we've learned from those experiences. And because of some very brave men and women, we've been able to move forward. And I'm not going to say we're living in a perfect world, but we're living in a much better world today because of those past experiences and the people who stepped up and stepped forward at that time to make things better. And if we can keep doing that, we'll be okay.
Okay, I agree with you, Jim. I agree with you. And for Kaepernick to bring up Betsy Ross and Kaepernick to say something about, well, I call Nike and say that's not a good idea to celebrate the 4th of July by featuring a shoe because of slavery. You're listening to a moron. I'm not kidding you. He is that stupid.
Mm-hmm.
And for us to – here's what I say, Jim, and I don't want to be mouthy on this. You know, I can go back to my father. When my father was in the Army and then – when he snuck in the Army at 15, and then they found out that he was too young, so they sent him back. He was under training. He told the story. He was in the Korean War, but when he snuck in the Army, he was in, it was like World War II, the end of World War II, but he was coming back on the train, and they made him get up and watch the Nazis. So they wanted the Nazi soldiers to sit in the front, and they made him go in the back. And then I go with the same thing, bottom line. Slavery happened, folks, but the bottom line, this is our country now. And
right.
In the Civil War, we have people who are in the South who are black fighting for the South and people black fighting for the North, meaning this is our country now, good or bad. And we have the Tuskegee Airmen who were the black Buffalo. We go with the Buffalo soldiers way back in the day, fighting the Indians, and the Indians said these were the most brave soldiers in the world. Buffalo soldiers were the black soldiers. This
right.
is our country now.
Mm-hmm.
So we, and that's what it is. And then to say, and to go back to slavery and slavery, hey, wait, slow down. Fine, it did happen, but this is your country now. And we have many men, many black men and black women fighting in the war, in World War II, and we're going into the war that couldn't even wear their uniforms in the street. They still died for this country. This is all we have. And we got to make it a better place. And like you said, Jim, so eloquently, yeah, it was not – the history is a lot of black marks, but we fought. Look where we are now. We had a black president. We have moved forward. And if we keep looking in the back – and we keep accusing people who are doing things that about slavery and bringing it up every 5 minutes, we're never going to move forward. I can go to any school I want to. I went to university. I could become president if I want to. That's what we're living in now. I could date white women if I want to. In fact, my girlfriend is white.
Well,
that's,
you know,
I
have a 16-year-old daughter who can aspire to be anything in this world that she wants to be.
And that's a good point with women, too.
Right.
So let's
and
move forward, folks. Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
ahead,
we can't forget our past, but it's in the past, and we need the important thing about the past is that it's lessons learned, you know, and the old saying, those who don't no history are doomed to repeat it. You know, we shouldn't forget about it, but we need to look forward. You know, we need to kind of keep one eye over our shoulder, but keep looking straight ahead and keep moving on. And
yeah,
I agree.
Yeah, don't let the past rule what you can do today or rule what you can do in the future.
Yeah, don't let it define you. Just use it as like I said, a lesson learned. But, you
That's
know, also
right.
Talk about Civil War and the contribution of black Americans at that time. I heard something just recently that I believe the number is 6 black soldiers were awarded the Congressional Medal of Honor during the Civil War. And,
really?
Yeah, it's a number something like it's definitely more than one. I think the number is 6. So, you know. I need
Hold
to
on.
Google that. That just popped in my mind. I just don't remember the exact number.
Wow.
But, yeah, I mean, you know, you talk about the ultimate sacrifice and
sure.
above and beyond. There's no better definition than that.
That is true. But I still think as long as we keep bringing black and white, and I hear this and I hear this all the time, Jim, and then we can go with what we're talking about. And it really bothers me. As long as we keep hearing first woman,
right,
you're the first woman direct.
Yeah, I found it. I found it. And this was in Wikipedia. It's 25
mm-hmm.
African-Americans earned the Medal of Honor during the American Civil War.
Wow, that's amazing.
Sailors of the Navy, 15 soldiers of the United States colored troops, and 3 soldiers of other Army units.
Wow, that is absolutely amazing. But yeah. The point is what I'm saying is as long as we keep defining ourselves of our color or race or whatever, we're never going to move forward. When I hear people say the first woman director or the first woman president or the first woman this and the first woman this, or when I hear, oh, I'm the first African-American woman this and this and this, why can't you say you're the first woman?
Right.
Why can't you know what I mean? Why do we have to define? If you don't want us defined by a race, then don't mention I'm the first black who did this. Well, you're a great director. But I'm not going to get into the racial thing on this show because I don't have that much time. Jim, the reason you're here, it's very important. And if you could tell people a little bit about your background, and we're going to go into the school shooting and safety, which is the major thing I would like to talk about. And don't forget your book.
Yes, okay. this is my second time on your show, Brian. And we talked about two books that I wrote. The first one is called The Falcon's Revenge, and the second, most recent, is An Evil Among Us. And they're fictional stories. They've got an aviation theme to them, but the stories are about a terrorist plot to attack the U.S. and how the bad guys go about planning it and carrying it out. But the aviation aspect of it, it ties in with my background. My career, I retired a few years ago after working 45 years as an aerospace engineer for both in private industry and also as a government employee. And the last 20 years of my career, I worked for the Department of the Navy as a civilian, as a system safety engineer. And I was responsible for the safety programs on 2 Marine Corps aircraft, the AH-1 Cobra and the UH-1 Huey. And what that amounted to was my job was to sort of be aware. I kind of jokingly say that my job was to try to keep the Marines from killing themselves when they were flying these aircraft. But what it really amounted to was even after an aircraft is fielded, and this goes for the commercial side too. I mean, I'm speaking now about the military side of aviation, but the whole system safety activity is also carried out with regard to commercial aircraft. But the idea is to look at your system, which in this case is an aircraft, and identify any weaknesses or hazards that may exist. And these change as time goes on because the aircraft may be used differently or it may be modified, and new things can come up that had not manifested themselves before. So the idea is to just keep an eye out. And again, this is, you know, we talked about history and the importance of history. Well, the historical record is important in this job, in the job I did also, because things that had happened and that were reported that didn't contribute to an accident or a mishap, but maybe were just, an inconvenient thing that, you know, an item malfunctioned or broke or something like that, didn't cause an accident, but given a different set of circumstances or operating environment, it may have. So we look for things like that, and reports on problems was one of the sources of information. Going out to the various naval air stations, talking to the pilots and the maintainers, you know, was another source of information. And then we would do an assessment report if we identified a problem, and then pass that up the line, up the chain of command, to the program office, to the program manager was in a position to, he would make the decision whether it was important enough to do something about it and then identify funds and, you know, take care of the problem and continue to move on. So when I was doing that kind of work, and again, it's a forward-looking activity. You know, you're always looking, doing the mental what ifs. Well, what if this happened? What if this broke? Or what if this was the situation was a little bit different? Would it have caused a problem?
Mm-hmm.
But it's a forward-looking approach, and the whole idea of the system safety methodology evolved over time, and I'd say it came into being like right after World War II, in the late 40s, early 50s. And it didn't originate in aviation, and it's been adopted by the aviation community. But it was originally, the focus of it originally was the commercial nuclear power industry. In the early 50s, you know, nuclear power was being looked at as, you know, the big savior of supplying supplying the country with unlimited electrical power and that kind of thing. So as they started building nuclear power plants, the people involved knew that if there were even one accident early on, that would be the end of the industry. You know, it would never be pursued and developed. So they developed this approach where every single aspect would be scrutinized to the nth degree of the design, of the manufacturing processes, the materials, and everything was looked at in minute detail before, you know, from concept through detailed design, then through development and production and operation. And that approach became evolved into this whole system safety engineering activity. And then as years went by, commercial aviation adopted it, military aviation adopted it. The space program, NASA, this is a big thing with NASA, launch vehicles, satellites, and all that go through this scrutiny. And there are probably literally hundreds, probably maybe even thousands of people involved in this whole process. Like, everyone who gets on a commercial aircraft benefits from the activity of this type of activity. You know, anyone who turns a light switch on and gets their electrical power from a nuclear power plant. The weapons that keep this country safe are nuclear arsenals, submarines, land-based missiles, everything like that is subject to this, to the system safety process.
Mm-hmm.
So what ended up being a trigger for me was when in December 2012 was the school shooting at the Sandy Hook Elementary School in Newtown, Connecticut.
Mm-hmm.
Most of the fatalities were young children, you know, kindergartners, first graders, second graders. And I think there were 26 fatalities, children and teachers, and a few teachers also. And what hit me especially hard, I mean, besides the fact that these were babies that were massacred, was the fact that at that time, my daughter was a kindergarten teacher in the Newark, New Jersey public school system. And, you know, I just felt this, I don't know, it's a feeling I can't describe, but it was just one of, oh my God, you know, what if that had happened at her school? Could that have happened at her school? And then I got to thinking about it, you know, if we are able to define something or as a system, let's say, we should be able to apply the system safety methodology, this forward-looking approach to identifying hazards or weaknesses and fix them before something bad happens, like we do with airplanes and submarines and everything else.
Right.
So that got me thinking about it, and the end result of that was this paper I wrote, and it steps the reader through the methodology. You know, it introduces it. There's a little background at the beginning, and then it introduces the approach. And that's a real common sense thing. I mean, it's so common sense. It's hard to believe that anybody, you know, hasn't thought of this before and decided to implement it. But it took a lot of years for it to gain traction in these other industries, and I'm coming to find out that it's probably going to take more years than I have left on this earth before it gains traction with regard to public safety. But I think maybe some organizations and some municipalities, or, you know, like big cities like New York City, probably even L.A., use some form of this when they have their, you know, when they are getting ready for some sort of big celebration, you know, like the 4th of July or New Year's Eve or something like that. I got to believe that they implement, they may not call it the same thing, but you know, they probably use this same approach. But to get back to the schools, this process, the system safety process, is something that's easy to explain. And if you read the paper, you know, I wrote it with the intention of somebody is going to read it who doesn't know anything about what I'm talking about. So I tried to, you know, I tried to explain it very simply and keep it very simple. And I thought at first of presenting it or submitting it. There's a professional organization called the International System Safety Society. And at first I thought about submitting it to them and then making a present. They have a conference once a year. They have one in the U.S. and then one overseas someplace. You know, presenting it at the conference and putting it out there that way. But then after thinking about it some more, I mean, yeah, that would have given me some recognition and all of that, but it wouldn't have accomplished what I really want to try to accomplish with this. And that's to actually, there's when one of these school shootings happen, there's two questions that people ask. The first question is, why did this happen? You know, why did this? The second question is, what are we going to do to prevent it from happening again? You know, why can't we stop this from happening? I don't have an answer for that first question, the why. I mean, you know, it's got probably more to do with the shooter and what's going on in their mind than anything else. But the question of what we can do about it is what that paper addresses. And that's why I didn't want to publish it with this society, because then they have the copyright privileges for it. They then also, you know, they offer it for sale as part of their way of getting revenue. And besides, if I presented it to, you know, 200 or 300 system safety professionals, I'm preaching to the choir. They all understand, right. And they, you know, would be all sitting there nodding their heads, yeah, 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 but nothing, you know, would happen beyond that. Mm-hmm. So I wanted to offer it to the public. And I, this is where it gets kind of interesting. When I wrote this, I didn't have a Facebook account or a Twitter account. You know, I wasn't on social media. I wrote the paper after Sandy Hook, which was, I finished it around March of 2013. Well, since then, I'm on Facebook, I'm on Twitter, Instagram, all those things. And after the shooting last year in Parkland, Florida, at Marjorie Stoneman Douglas High School, mm-hmm. I said, this has got to stop. Why can't, and I had, well, now I had a Twitter account and all that, so I figured, okay, I'm going to do something right. about this. I found out that on the C-SPAN website, they have listed all the contact information, like every member of Congress, every politician you can think of who has a Twitter account, they have their Twitter account there. So I generated a tweet that, you know, addressed what had happened, you know, this tragedy can be stopped. I wrote a paper about it, and I included the link to a Dropbox account I have where there's a copy of the paper. And I tweeted that to every member of Congress, to every representative in the House of Representatives, every senator, every state governor, the attorney, members of the cabinet, Trump's cabinet. I sent it to Trump, sent it to just about everybody I could think of, you know, in that the political universe there.
Mm-hmm.
And you know what the response was?
What was it?
It was like crickets chirping. Nothing.
Right.
Not a gee, thanks, you know, or nothing. Not that I was looking for anything back, but not any sort of acknowledgement. And I also sent it to the Connecticut, to the Sandy Hook people, the governor of Connecticut, the mayor of the town, the chairman of the group of parents that had gotten together. Never got anything back. Never, you know, not even an acknowledgement. So then I'm thinking, well, maybe I'm aiming too high. Maybe instead of a top-down approach, I should take maybe a bottom-up approach. So I went to see my state legislature, who represents the district I live in, and this guy, I've known him since we were kids. He's a personal friend of mine. His mother was my Cub Scout den mother, you know, so we go back there. And his wife is a teacher, and she's on the local school board. So I think, all right, let me try with him. You know, maybe we can make a dent in this, at least in New Jersey. And I talked to him, and our conversation was disappointing because the first thing that he said was kind of like an excuse why this isn't possible. Like, oh, you know, as soon as you need more than one or two people to agree on something, it's really hard to do.
Right.
And I'm thinking, okay, isn't that your job? You know, anyway, so I don't know. That's why, I'm not going to give up, and I appreciate the opportunity you've given me to talk about it.
Right.
But gaining traction with this, I mean, it's a simple concept, and it's an easy thing to do, but it's not you know, it's something that's going to require to really be effective. It's something that requires all levels of government to get involved. You know, the federal level should set the policy, establish a policy, and then flow that down to the states, and then the states can can disseminate that policy to the counties, the cities, the different school districts, and essentially say, hey, take a look at your schools and follow this process of hazard identification, analysis, and then mitigation, and you know, come up with a report that documents what you think you need and how much money you think you need to implement it. And then, you know, flow that back up to the states, the federal. But because, well, the reason I say that as far as, you know, bringing up money is because that becomes a real sticking point. Because one of the first pushbacks you get, or I get when I talk about this, that's going to cost so much money. And right away, if I'm talking to the superintendent of schools, it's like, you know, we don't have that kind of money in our budget, you know.
Right.
And I'm saying, well, it shouldn't come out of your budget. You know, there's a couple of other ways to approach this. And I include this in the paper because I knew that would be one of the significant pushbacks. Oh, this is going to cost too much money, yada, yada. Where are we going to get the money? We don't have the money. All that kind of stuff. So in the paper, I identify two sources of funding. And the first one has to do with firearms, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Right now, there exists a 10% excise tax, federal excise tax, on the wholesale cost of firearms and ammunition. And that money that the feds collect is put into a fund and is made available to the states on a cost-share basis to fund wildlife conservation programs, hunter safety, firearm safety programs. So I say in the paper, why not expand that to include school safety?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, because, you know, one of the things you hear is, well, the firearm industry, you know, nowhere in this paper do I use the words gun control, okay? Because
right.
I don't think that's the answer. But if you think that guns are part of the problem, well, there already exists a tax on firearms.
Mm-hmm.
So why not just expand the use of that money to help fund school safety? Okay, that's
right.
That's the first one. Like I said, well, it's 10% now, so you could leave it at 10% and just, you know, spread the money over a broader area or increase it 1 or 2%. Changing an existing law is a lot easier than trying to implement a new law or new tax. You know, it would have to be the Congress would have to create legislation for a new tax, but I don't know if this is something that could be done by executive order, or it would have to actually be, you know, an act of Congress to expand the use of this tax revenue. I'm not a politician, and I don't understand all the intricacies of our laws and that kind of thing. But anyway,
mm-hmm.
that's something that's on the books, could be modified to include school safety. The other thing, which should be even less controversial, is the fact that if you look at your federal IRS 1040 tax form, there's a checkbox on there where you can contribute, I think it's $3 now, to the presidential election campaign. You know, if you just check the box. If you file jointly, I think you can, you know, donate up $6. It doesn't come out of your tax. I'm not sure exactly how they generate, but anyway, it goes to people who are campaigning, you know, for president. It goes to their presidential election campaign. And there's some criteria to qualify for that money, which I'm not sure of. But there's that checkbox there. So why not add another checkbox for the school safety campaign to that IRS form? I would be willing to bet. Now, I don't check the box when I do my taxes for the presidential campaign, because I figure they can get their own money. But I sure as hell would check it if there was a box there to help fund school safety. And the states that have a state income tax, like New Jersey, we have a state, the equivalent of the 1040 for the state. And there's a box on there, a similar box to donate to the gubernatorial election campaign fund. Well, again, for states like that, put a box there, you know, donate to the school safety fund. Okay, I would be willing to bet you'd get more money than you'd know how to spend if you did something like that. And then the people would right. see that. I mean, this would be a visible way of showing support and, you know, getting serious about dealing with this school shooting issue. And
Jim, but what about the people, Jim? I didn't mean to interrupt you, and it sounds like a great idea, and the plan does sound like it could fund itself by doing checking the boxes, but safety protection is expensive. We're going with the budget, and you already solved that problem. But what about the idea of some people thinking, no matter what you do, no matter how safe you make a situation, there's going to be someone, because crazy is unpredictable, and it's usually somebody within your own circle who creates the chaos. We could protect ourselves from the strangers because we know who they are. But when you have somebody, let's say the schools, when you have a student who's been going to the school for 2 years and all of a sudden, you know, he has a problem or she has a problem and he starts shooting people, no matter what safety procedures you have, it may minimize the death, but do you agree that no matter what you do, there's going to be casualties if somebody just goes off? I don't know how we can safeguard ourselves from everything.
Here's the thing. Let me just say one thing about safety in general.
Right.
And there is no such thing as 100% safe. Okay.
Right.
We'll always, I mean, as safe as commercial air travel is now, every once in a while there's a mishap, there's an accident.
Right.
You know? There are fatalities. But we're so much better off today than we were 30, 40, 50 years ago. And that's the whole idea of this. The safety approach I'm talking about, we in aviation, we call it a life cycle approach. In other words, it begins before there's even an airplane. You know, it begins when there's a concept, and it progresses all the way through the system's life cycle until we're ready to dispose of it. And that's when it ends. And this was the activity I was engaged with, you know, because things change. So, you know, as I'm talking, using the aircraft or aviation analogy, think of schools, okay, within the same context. Yes, things change in our society. What places and situations that used to be safe are no longer safe because certain conditions and circumstances have changed. The way we deal with people with mental health issues, the
right.
rise of extremism and fanaticism, the breakdown of the family unit, you know, violent video. There's a whole plethora of things that occur over time that can impact this. So, we need to constantly be vigilant. This approach is not a one and done sort of thing. You know, we
right.
need to keep looking for those and doing those what ifs. Okay, that's the first thing. The other thing about you know, all of a sudden a kid snaps, shows up at school with a gun and starts shooting people. What you need to do. And I'm not the best person to be giving advice on exactly what measures need to be implemented. My forte is you know, the approach and how you identify what you need. But for me, it's kind of simple. If somebody shows up at your front door with a weapon and he can't or she can't get in, you're going to be safe. So
right.
You need to secure the school, and there's a whole bunch of ways to do that. And I'm not talking about, you know, barbed wire and machine guns or anything like that. This is what you identify when you look at your system's weaknesses. But for the sake of this discussion, let's call the school building the system. The dictionary defines a system as something that has a lot of interrelated and interconnected parts that work together for some, you know, to have some common outcome. Well, an airplane, that's obvious, but a school building is also a system. You've got ingress, egress, you know, doorways in, doorways out, windows, the construction material, what the building is constructed of. You've got students, teachers, staff, parents, and all these things, utilities, electrical, heating, whatever, all of these individual pieces are working together, you know, to provide this place of learning. Well, what you want to do is look at that and say, okay, where are the weaknesses? You know, in the aviation analogy, we call them hazards, but where are my weaknesses? And this is where history helps. You look at the historical record about previous school shootings. How did they get in? What did they use? What did they do when they got there? You know,
right.
In the Sandy Hook Elementary School, that kid, I mean, he had mental issues that
mm-hmm.
apparently were not well handled. And I mean, he killed himself, so we don't really know the why, you know, what really triggered him. But he showed up at the front door. They locked the door 8:15 or something like that. He had an AR-15. He shot his way in. He shot through the door lock, through the pane glass in the window. He got inside. And now the classrooms had wooden doors. Maybe there were glass windows. You know, just regular pane glass. He shot his way into the classrooms and murdered the kids. Okay, well, right there that tells you, all right, what could have been done to keep him out? Now, this is just the one case. Well, if you had a hardened steel door frame on that locked door, he wouldn't have been able to shoot through that. If you have ballistic glass in your first floor school classroom windows, you can't shoot through it or throw a pressure cooker
right.
bomb through it or anything like that. So, you know, you've secured your outer perimeter. And then in the meantime, okay, you know, a video surveillance, a direct line, push a button, an emergency call goes to the police station, because the quicker, and first responders get there usually pretty quick. But
right.
even if it takes them 5 minutes, that's too long. So the quicker they get there, the less, you know, mayhem this individual can cause. Okay, so let's say something, you know, he figured out some ingenious way to get into the school. All right.
Mm-hmm.
But again, he's probably tried a couple things, and now this has increased his timeline. He spent more time trying to get in. So first responders are coming. Now he's in the school. Well, again, if the classroom doors are locked and they're hardened steel, and if there are windows between the classroom and the hallway, if they're ballistic glass, he can't shoot his way into a classroom. And this is the
right.
thing. You hear people talk about the safety protocol that's in place now in schools is this shelter-in-place thing, which
mm-hmm.
if you don't do anything to the school, I mean, if you don't do anything with regard to the way the school is constructed, that shelter-in-place is bogus, because now you've got dozens of kids in a classroom that the shooter can get into. So all you've done is just corralled all these people in one place and have created, you know, more targets for this person to shoot. So you need,
right.
if shelter in place is going to be part of your policy, you need a safe place to shelter in place. And that's, you know, the other thing. And that's the idea of system safety. You look at the whole picture. You don't look at, you know, an isolated, oh, you know, how am I going to keep them out of my classroom? Or, you know, oh, we'll just shelter in place. Or no, you got to look at the big picture, your whole system and
right.
all the weaknesses. And so this is the approach. If you can keep them out of the building, or if you can slow them up substantially for first responders to get there, you're going to maximize your, you know, the safety posture and minimize casualties. So this is, you know, it's such a simple idea, but I don't know, you know, I haven't been able to gain any traction with it.
Well, I think you hit the nail on the head. It's all about the money and the budget. And that's probably your roadblock with the politicians, even though you even had to check the box. But even if you kind of put a question in that box or check an extra box, it's going to cost it. It's just, I don't know. When you're dealing with politicians, or get it done,
yeah.
maybe,
well, the thing,
I guess.
What happens after one of these incidents is you see victims, families, and friends and whatnot starting GoFundMe pages, you know, which are intended to help the victim's family with different things. But what it points to, though, is that Americans, you know, the general population is very sympathetic to this whole thing. They want to help. People want to do something. People want this to stop, and they're anxious to do something. And if it means donating some money to a GoFundMe page, or
right.
you know, there's always, after something like this happens, there's always this big outcry, and this, you know, you hear politicians talk, and you get people become activists, like this the students at Parkland High, you know, they become activists trying to promote, but they end up, there always seems to be this knee-jerk reaction to jump right away to a solution like, oh, we need more gun control. Oh, we need better health monitoring. Oh, we need, you know, to eliminate military-style rifles and all that. You know, that's, I'm not going to say that's not worth pursuing, but it's not the most effective way. Because right away you run into people who become defensive and say, no, you know, I have a right to this and a right to that, you know, and people shut down and they don't listen. So
right.
those sorts of things, I mean, they all have value. It'd be great. I mean, if we could eliminate every firearm on the face of the earth, we wouldn't be having this discussion now. But there's always going to be, and it's not just assault rifles. There's, I mean, you look at the history again, there's handguns, there's even knives. You got to keep the weapons and the means of employing them out of the school. And not just, I mean, this isn't just school safety. This is the same thing. I mean, we have malls where there's people, you know, a lot of people, and there's been shootings in malls, movie theaters, there's a whole lot of different places that the system safety methodology can be applied to keep people safe. It's just that the school shootings are so horrific, and they are happening, it seems, more frequently.
Mm-hmm.
I updated, I wrote the paper in 2013. I updated it at the end of 2015. So I included calendar year 2013 and 14 data in the update. So it's been about, what's that, almost 4 years since I updated it. And in a way, I'm kind of afraid to update it again because I know what it's going to show. It's going to show that this whole situation has gotten worse. It hasn't gotten better. The frequency of these events are increasing. Virtually nothing has been done to stop it.
Right.
Or I should say nothing effective has been done to stop it. If you look at the – did you – I sent you a copy of the paper, right, Brian?
Yes, you did. Because you gave us a very good paper.
On page two is a graph which shows the frequency of school shootings from 1976 through 2014. And the trend line on that graph continues to rise over that period of time. And in the more recent years, from like about 2006 to 2014, the slope of the curve is increasing, which means the frequency of events is increasing. I also identify on there, I bracket from 1994 to 2004, there was an assault weapon ban in place. We couldn't buy assault weapons, like AR-15s or AK-47s, and I believe the ban also included the import of those weapons. Well, the curve continued to rise through that period. So, right there it tells you, okay, that's a well-intentioned, if you look at it that way, action, but it was ineffective. So let's try something that is proven effective in other industries and apply it to our schools.
Right.
That's all I'm saying. This isn't system safety is not a pie in the sky theoretical, academic exercise. It's real world. It's out there working. And why we can't use it to keep our kids safe in schools, or why we're not using it to keep our kids safe, is beyond my comprehension.
Are you still pursuing this, Jim? Are you still going to, your city councilman because you have a good idea, the paper was great. I don't know where to go from here. I hope you don't give up. There's going to be somebody going to listen to you. Somebody,
eventually, hopefully. No, I'm not going to give up. Life gets in the way of things too. I pursue this for a while, and then other things, take over what I've got to do. And unfortunately, like I said, there's this big hubbub over when something happens, but that's not the time to do something. The time to do something is now, before that next event happens. I'm going to keep pursuing. That's why I'm going to keep pursuing it, and that's why I appreciate the opportunity to talk about this on your show. Maybe a listener is listening who is in a position to help. That would be great. Prior to me talking to you here today, I put a post on my author Facebook page, which is J.E. Holling, and I pinned it to the top. And the post just says, hey, I wrote this paper. It's available in my Dropbox account, and there's a link to the Dropbox account. So anybody who goes to my author Facebook page, the first post, they'll see this information as the first post. So they can click on that link. It'll take them right to the paper. They can download it or read it, whatever they want to do. It's there. They can message me for any more information or anything else. But that's the best idea I've come up with so far on how to make it available to people at no cost. I don't want any money for this. I just want to get the word out and let people know, especially the people who are suffering through one of these horrific tragedies, that it's not hopeless. that there is
right.
something positive that can be done about this, because we're doing it in other places. There's no reason we can't do it with regard to our schools. There's no good reason why another child has to die in a school shooting, because there is a solution. We just need to get the right people, or get to the right people, and you know, get their ear and their buy-in. Unfortunately, that's
well,
the hard part.
Well, not so much. Use your Twitter, Jim. You can reach the right people with your Twitter. You could. Or there's another area you can go to. It's easy to do you heard of move.org. You can also go on move.org and start a campaign to get your name out there, to get your cause out there, to get your safety assessment plan out there. So you have move.org, you have Twitter. You can start a
okay.
movement and get people behind you. Well, the you go to move.
What is it spelling? M-O-V-E?
Yeah, moveon.org or something like that, move.org.
Yeah, I'm
okay.
going to give you that information, Jim. I have you on my Facebook. I'm going to send you
okay.
that information that you can
yeah,
start a
is,
movement.
LinkedIn.
LinkedIn, too?
Yeah,
LinkedIn.
I'm sorry, what?
LinkedIn.
Oh, LinkedIn. Yeah. Well,
LinkedIn.
Actually, I do have a.
LinkedIn.
Yeah, I do have a LinkedIn account, and on my LinkedIn page, I have a link to my Dropbox account, and I,
mm-hmm.
you know, under one of the categories there are, you know, publications and whatnot, and I have indicated there that this paper exists and it's available, so I do have it on LinkedIn. Yes.
Okay.
But I'll have to check
and
that out. Yeah, I'm open to suggestions.
Well, yeah, I'll see you how to start a campaign and get people behind you, because once you get your name out there and what you're concerned about, there's other people who are with you, and they can get you to the right people. But Twitter is the one, too, that you can find the school board people and so on and so forth, and they can take you onto another path also. And, Jim, our show is over because our another guest is coming in about 1 minute. Can you say really
okay.
quickly your book and where to get it, Jim? And thank you for coming in. I always love you, man. But
okay, thanks. Appreciate it. Yeah, the book is An Evil Among Us, and it's available on my Amazon author page. It's also available on your streamable store. And all you'd have to do is search Amazon for the title An Evil Among Us, or my pen name, which is J. E. Holling, H-O-L-L-I-N-G.
Jim, thank you so much, my friend. And I'll get you that information on Facebook, and we'll get this movement going, and we'll get you to the people that you need to get to. It's been a pleasure,
okay.
and you've been so good to us. And
appreciate
ladies
it.
And gentlemen, oh, my pleasure. Jim Horling, everybody, H-O-R-L-I-N-G. And our next
right.
show is going to start in about 20 seconds. Jim, thank you so much, buddy.
Okay, you're welcome. Have a good day, and we'll talk to you again sometime.
Oh, well, we'll
Bye.
Talk soon. Not sometime.
Yep.
Where are you going? We'll be talking
yeah.
soon.
We always
All
talk
right,
on
Jim.
Facebook.
Yeah.
Okay. Oh, yeah.
Jim's
yeah,
always
get
trying to get
phone.
Rid of us. Okay. Thanks, Jim. Have a good day. And our next guest is Irene Barron. She's up right now. She's going to be talking about Donald Trump and about the war for college. All right, Jim, take care. Support Jim Horling, H-O-R-L-I-N-G. Friend him on Facebook. He's a hell of a guy. And let's get his movement going. Thank you. And our next show will start in exactly 10 seconds. Thank you, everybody. We'll be right back for the double hitter. And people call me and call right back. Okay. And, well,